All right, we've been tracking Moshe's progress in his coming to identify with the Brit, and we've been speaking over the past two parshiot about the evolvement of Moshe's understanding of the Brit as opposed to his understanding of the here and now, the understanding that the Brit is a long-term process, a process that began hundreds of years before Yetziat Mitzrayim came into play, before Moshe himself became an active character within the story of Am Yisrael. And I want in this parasha to continue tracking that same theme, to continue tracking the two ideas behind Yetziat Mitzrayim on the level of taking Bnei Yisrael out of Mitzrayim, as far as what happens here and now, as far as what we called at the time the moral point of view, where Bnei Yisrael deserved to be taken out of Mitzrayim because no nation deserves to be enslaved by another nation. No nation has the right to take and enslave another nation. And on this level, it's God's moral obligation to take Bnei Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. And here we're looking more at what's actually happening in real time, at the here and now of Bnei Yisrael being taken out of Mitzrayim. This does not involve the process that we've been going through throughout Yetziat Mitzrayim, which is much, much more involved, which goes back once again to the Brit, to the idea of God's name being brought out in the world, to the Brit with Avraham, that Bnei Yisrael are going to become a great nation, and that they are going to receive Eretz Yisrael. All of this is part of a much bigger plan that spans a lot longer as well, and that we need a lot more patience for. And this involves the process of the Makot, the process that Paro has to go through in order to come to the realization that Hashem is God, the process of taking down the Egyptians, the Egyptians' beliefs in their gods, and the process of educating Bnei Israel that they are part of a process here, they are part of a long-term relationship with God here, and that they have to look beyond the here and now in order to understand really what's happening in the here and now. And we see that this perspective, this more historical perspective, is related to throughout the story, not only by the Makot themselves, not only by what's actually happening in Mitzrayim, but throughout the process, Hashem keeps reiterating that there are reasons here beyond just what we see with the naked eye, just what he is interested in achieving as far as Bnei Israel are concerned. And this is what we called the Brit and the long-term process of the Brit. We discussed the fact that that Moshe himself being a very moral person on the one hand, and on the other hand, being someone who is not brought up to appreciate the Brit, because he is not brought up in a Jewish household, in a Hebrew household, is someone who doesn't easily relate to the Brit. Aharon relates much more easily to the Brit, and as soon as Moshe tells him about the mission, he jumps, he's there, he has no problem proceeding with God's command. And we see that Moshe, too, as he sees that things are actually happening, as he sees that the Egyptians are being punished, as he sees that Bnei Israel's situation perhaps is getting better, or at least that they're headed toward a good place, that they're headed toward a place where we're seeing the possibility of them actually being let go, he too comes around. And we said that we saw this a little bit in Makat Shechin, where Moshe himself takes, where Moshe and Aharon for a change, whereas usually Moshe is commanded to do a Makah, Moshe is commanded to speak to Paro. Here Moshe and Aharon are commanded to go and perform the Makah of Shechin together. And the one who actually performs the act that brings on the Makah, the physical action, is Moshe. And from here on in, throughout the rest of the Makot, Aharon is sort of disappears. He disappears as far as God is concerned, or as far as our perspective is concerned. He doesn't disappear as far as Paro is concerned, by the way. We see that whenever Paro calls on Moshe, come and relieve me of this Makah, he calls on Moshe and Aharon. In other words, from now on, Moshe and Aharon, maybe Aharon was introduced originally as an afterthought because Moshe really couldn't handle, because the process had to begin, and Moshe could not handle beginning the process, and so Aharon is introduced. But once Aharon was introduced, and once Aharon becomes so heavily involved in the process, Aharon is identified with the process by Paro. Later on, we'll see also by Bnei Israel. And in this parasha, we will see also by Hashem. And as we saw earlier, Aharon is always introduced by Hashem when we have this duality of the mission of taking Bnei Israel out of Mitzrayim relating not only to the here and now, not only to the fact that they deserve to be taken out of Mitzrayim and not to be slaves, not only to the moral aspect, but more specifically to the duality between the moral aspect and the Brit aspect. And so when we come to the parasha of God's command of Pesach in Parashat Bo, Hashem commands Bnei Israel to take sheep and slaughter it and eat it in a certain way. And there's a great stress on the manner in which this animal has to be eaten. The timing here is essential. And we're going to hear throughout this parasha, which we're going to read in a moment, that perspective, that duality of perspective is very much present. That we have the perspective on the one hand of the here and now, the Hatzalav Bnei Israel are going to have to be rescued, and this animal, this eating, this su'udah that they're going to have is going to be an essential part of that. And at the same time, we have these grandiose statements of what God is actually doing by taking Bnei Israel out of Mitzrayim, that when Bnei Israel themselves look at, maybe in the here and now, they don't necessarily relate to. And we're going to see that this relates to a very interesting style that the parasha is written in. In Shemot Perek Yud Bet, we have something that's somewhat unusual, not that we don't find it in any other place in the Tanakh, but certainly unusual to the Tanakh. Whereas in most places in the Tanakh, in the Torah, we hear Hashem commanding Moshe, I'd like you to tell this to Bnei Israel. So we know the famous pasuk that appears maybe hundreds of times throughout the Torah, Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe lemor, Vayomer Hashem el Moshe lemor. And then we hear the parasha of, let's take for example, tzitzit. And then we assume by the lemor, the fact that Hashem says you have to pass on this information to Bnei Israel, that Moshe indeed passes on the information to Bnei Israel. What we don't usually have is the actual repetition of what Moshe says. In other words, we assume that Hashem says to Moshe, deliver this message, and so Moshe actually delivers that message. What we have in Parashat Bo is an interesting parshia, where Hashem delivers a certain message to Moshe. He says, go and tell this to Bnei Israel, or more specifically, Moshe and Aharon, as we'll see in a moment. And then we have the Torah coming and repeating what Moshe actually says to Bnei Israel. The heading is going to be, Vayikra Moshe lechol ziknei Israel, vayomer alehem. And then there's a repetition of God's commandment. Of course, this repetition begs a comparison to God's words. And we're going to see that in the comparison, really, there are certain elements that are stressed, and this is going to connect with the mahalach, the tracking that we've been doing of Moshe's development, and soon we're going to introduce Am Yisrael as people who are being developed through this as well. But we shouldn't get ahead of ourselves. Let's start with the parasha itself and see the stress and see what the stresses are when we look at the parasha of what will become known as Pesach, as Korban Pesach. But a question arises within the Pesukim themselves exactly about this balance between the here and now and the broader aspect of the Brit that comes across here is what Chazal call the difference between Pesach Mitzrayim and Pesach Dorot. There's the Pesach that Bnei Israel performed when they were in Mitzrayim, and there are certain components that don't repeat themselves in Pesach Dorot, and there are certain components that come up here that are really relevant for the future. And so the entire parasha is written in this very interesting style, looking at the one hand at the here and now, because this parasha is essential for Yitziat Mitzrayim itself, and on the other hand, giving us a broader perspective, even on the here and now, giving us a broader perspective on what the here and now means. And so let's look into the Pesukim and see what those details are. The basic question, though, that's going to have to come up throughout the Pesukim is what the nature of this Se'uda that they're commanded to have is at this point. Now, I already slipped and said Korban Pesach, because this is something that's going to be known as a Korban. But what we relate to as Korban Pesach here is missing, as we're going to read in a moment, a few essential components of what a Korban is about. Now, if we go already to Hilchot Korbanot, but even if we don't go so far as to go to Hilchot Korbanot, as they're described later on in Shemot and in Vayikra and in Bamidbar, even if we go to earlier places in the Torah where Korbanot are mentioned, because Avraham also sacrifices, Noach also sacrifices, we see that Korbanot is something that exists before the Torah is given. Even here, we are missing certain elements of a Korban, two really essential elements of what a Korban is about. One is a Mizbeach. We don't hear about a mizbech anywhere here in the parasha. And every korban that we've seen, when Noach sacrifices, he makes a mizbech. When Abraham sacrifices, he creates a mizbech. A mizbech is something which is essential for the sacrifice of a korban. But more importantly, the korban itself. What is a korban? A korban is a korban laHashem. In other words, a portion of the korban has to be given laHashem. And that's something that doesn't exist in the parasha that we look at here. The commandment is to take this animal, to slaughter it, and to eat it. That's the commandment. There's nothing here that's being donated, so to speak, to Hashem. And even though we see that throughout that in the korbanot themselves, as the way in the way they're described later on in the Torah, we don't believe in wastefulness, and so only a small portion really is burnt on the mizbech. It's always a small portion of an important part of the korban itself, and there's always something that's sacrificed to Hashem, even in korbanot that are eaten almost in their entirety by the people, like a korban shlamim, which is shared by many different people, like the Pesach itself. There's always something that's karev al gabei mizbech, that's given, a portion that's given to the mizbech, symbolically, in order to show that this is a korban that we're giving to God. And this component, though, naturally we look at the Pesach here as a korban because of what we know from later on. If you look at the psukim with an unadulterated eye, that's not necessarily the case. In other words, the fact that we're missing those two really main components, the components of the mizbech and the components of the eating, should make us wonder whether we're really talking about a korban. And then there's the flip side of that. Are there characteristics here that are so strong that relate to the two korbanot that make us realize that we do have a korban here? So let's look at that, these psukim with this question in mind. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe ve'Aaron be'eretz Mitzrayim lemor. So here I already pointed out that Hashem speaks to Moshe and Aharon. Here, in Shmot Perak Yud Bet. I'm sorry, I'm reading from the table that I gave out, but you could read in the Chumash as well, even better. Okay? Because we're not actually getting to the comparison yet. In Shmot Perak Yud Bet. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe ve'Aaron be'eretz Mitzrayim lemor. And Hashem spoke to Moshe and Aharon in Egypt, saying, and the word lemor is usually identified with the commandment to pass on the message. In other words, I'm not just telling you this so that you know, I'm telling this to you lemor, to tell someone else, to pass on the message that I'm telling you now. And yet, again, usually we hear Vayomer Hashem or Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe lemor, and then we don't hear what Moshe actually repeated. We just assume that he repeated the same thing, and so this is going to be important. Of course, another point that's important here that we pointed out before is that Hashem speaks to Moshe and Aharon. And although Aharon is heavily involved earlier with some of the makot, even in the makot that Aharon is involved in, Dam, Tzfardea, Kinim, and Arov and Dever, Hashem always speaks to Moshe. Moshe is always the one that Hashem speaks to directly. Aharon is the helper. And here we find that Hashem speaks, except for in the first Ot, the Ot of the Tanin, and here we find once again that Hashem is going back to speaking to Moshe and Aharon. So this already, on the basis of the last two Parshiyot, triggers the idea that there's going to be something here that goes beyond the scope of Yitziat Mitzrayim, of the here and now. This is going to be something that relates to the Brit, to the duality of Yitziat Mitzrayim, and this is going to be something that might be, once again, difficult for Moshe to identify with, because Moshe is more of a here and now person, and Aharon, as we said, represents more of the scope of the Brit. So this first pasuk is already significant to us as we've been tracking Moshe and Aharon's role here, the insertion of Aharon's role here specifically. And Hashem goes on to say, "Hachodesh hazeh lachem rosh chodashim, rishon hu lachem lechodshei hashana." This month is the first month of the year. It's the first, or the most important, of all of the months of the year. Dabru el kol adat Yisrael lemor be'asor lachodesh hazeh, ve'ikchu lahem ish se leveit avot se labayit. Speak to all of the nation of Israel and tell them, on the 10th of this month, they should take a sheep for each household. Each house shall have one sheep. Ve'imimat habayit mehiyot miseh, ve'lakachu shcheno akarov el beito b'michsat nefashot, ish lefi ochlo tachosu al haseh. And if there are too few people in the household for one sheep, so one household should take, along with their neighbor's household, he who is close to him, in order to cover michsat nefashot, to cover all of the people who are in the household, anybody who eats. And what is the criteria by which we go as far as this, how many sheep have to be taken? Ish lefi ochlo. The eating here is going to be essential to the process, and therefore the amount of sheep which are taken are the amount of sheep which we are able to finish eating. And we're going to see soon that another, that the component of the notar, the idea of not allowing any of the meat to be left over, is going to be an important component as well. But before we go there, I'd like to look at the word that maybe the theme of these psukim, the word that repeats itself four times in these psukim, is what? The bait. Okay? We see that the bait comes up here four times. Zikhu lahem ish se lebeit avot, se labait, v'imimat habait me'ayot mise, v'lakachu shcheno akarov el beito ben michsat nefashot. The bait comes up here four times, and this bait is a bait that we heard about earlier in Sefer Shmot as well, exactly in this transfer from what we see as the normal development of the family of Yaakov into the developing of the nation that's going to become the nation of God. And that appears right at the beginning of Sefer Shmot, when we have a mirror of the psukim in Parashat Vayichi at the very end of Bereshit. We have Yaakov coming down to Mitzrayim, and there it's Yaakov and his family, Yaakov and his children. And suddenly, right at the beginning of Shemot, in Shemot Perek Aleph, Pasuk Aleph, we hear, Ve'ele Shemot b'nei Yisrael abayim Mitzrayimah et Yaakov ish uveito ba'u. Suddenly we hear the word bait, because here we're not talking any longer about a family, we're talking here about a nation. And that's exactly the movement from Sefer Bereshit to Sefer Shemot, is the movement from the family of Abraham, the family of Yitzchak, and the family of Yaakov, into becoming the nation of Yaakov, and the nation is the nation that's going to become the nation of God. Of course, there's a historical move here as well, because in the two components of the Brit of Hashem to Avraham, we have the component. One of the components is going to be that Bnei Israel become a nation. One of the components is the component of the Zera, and that of them becoming a great nation, and that's a component we see already fulfilled at the beginning of Shemot. They become a great nation already at this point. But more than they don't only become great in numbers, but the actual fact of them becoming a nation, them being viewed as a nation, as one united nation rather than a family, is of course the movement from Bereshit to Shemot. But that's not the only time. The word bait repeats itself a few more times throughout Parashat Bereshit. First of all, we see in the involvement of the Mialdot, when Hashem sees their sacrifice in allowing Beit Yisrael to survive, we hear in Pasuk Kaf Aleph, Vayhi ki yar'u ha-mialdot et ha-Elohim, vaya'as lahem batim. God made homes, what we read here as homes, which of course before we read as a nation. In other words, God included somehow, or as a separate idea, he included these women, these mialdot, in the brit, midah keneged midah, just like they helped Bnei Israel, Beit Israel, survive as Beit Israel, he gave them batim as well. And the third time that the word bait comes up within this context is Vayelech Ish, that's right, Mi Beit Levi, Vaykach et Bat Levi, a very strange pasuk, not only because the names are not mentioned, but because if we have Bat Levi, why is he Mi Beit Levi? Why isn't he a Ben Levi? Why isn't he the son of Levi? And here again, the Torah, Parashat Shemot, Hashem is getting us into this mood, into this new idea of Bnei Israel moving on into the next stage where they're becoming a bait. They're not only a family, they're not a mishpacha, they are a bait. They are a nation. And Beit Israel is going to be a concept which, of course, is going to lead us into the next level of what Bnei Israel become. And so here, the sele beit avot, the sele bait, the stress on the household and what the household is going to mean here, and we're going to see what the household becomes throughout this process, the bait here is essential in moving Bnei Israel into the next level of a brit with Hashem. At the same time, and it's important to stress, because another stress that's going to be throughout the parasha is not only the bait and not only the brit element of the bait, which we'll discuss in a minute, but the eating. And here, I'd like to just say, to borrow a few words from really a shiur that should be given in a couple of parshiyot, so you'll bear with me. But I'd like to bring in an idea, not discuss it as thoroughly as it should be discussed, only for the sake of, again, understanding the parshiyah that we're in. And that is the component of the eating. I think it's very clear from the opening here, from the Hachodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim, from the idea that a date comes in here, that we're talking about a historical parshia, that it's not just God explaining to Bnei Israel how they're going to survive Makat Bechorot. We're talking about some sort of historical perspective looking back on what's about to happen. And Hashem, of course, sees all of history. He knows what's going to happen. And he's looking from above, and he's not stuck in the toil and the turmoil of the here and now. And therefore, he could have that broader perspective, and he could say, this is a time that history is in the making. And so when Hashem inserts the date here, he's inserting, this is something we look back on, and if Moshe comes and says to Bnei Israel, Chodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim, what Hashem is discussing here is something that really has absolutely no relevance to the lives of Bnei Israel right now, the lives of these Avadim. They're not out yet. And what they're looking forward to at this point is getting out. Not what this day is eventually going to represent and what this day is going to mark. When you're inside that making of history, it's harder to see the historical perspective because you're there. You're living here and now. And this is the theme we've been looking at throughout these parashot. But in this parasha itself, this is the parasha that really represents Hashem taking Bnei Israel as an am, as he says at the end of the parasha. If you skip down a few psukim to pasuk tetvav vahala, ki be'etzem ayom hazeh, hotzeti tzivotechem me'eretz Mitzrayim. This is the day that Hashem is going to take Bnei Israel out of Mitzrayim. And so the commandment of what Hashem expects Bnei Israel to do on this day, of course, is important, is relevant to the process that they're about to go through. And what does Hashem, in fact, command them to do? To take this animal and to shecht it and to eat it inside their house. Okay, each one inside his house, and the house is going to be a protective measure against them being killed along with the Egyptian children. But the essence of what they're expected to do at this point is eat. And here lies a very deep idea as far as our relationship with God on two levels. Let's look both at the here and now level and at the Brit perspective. If we look for a moment at the Brit perspective, the ideal that we're going to achieve throughout the next few parshiot of Avodat Hashem is going to be relating to Hashem here on earth through physical means, because Hashem created a physical world, and we're meant to relate to him through physical means. And this is the idea behind the korbanot. The korbanot are a way for us to show our willingness to sacrifice for God. As the Ramban says by the parshiot of korbanot, he explains, really, a person bringing a korban feels that he would sacrifice himself, but God doesn't accept human sacrifice, and of course this is immoral, and therefore this is some sort of representation of the fact that we are willing to sacrifice. But what's more essential here is relating to God through a physical means, and this physical means includes us being able to give something physical, to dabble in something, in an action that's actually physical, and in the fact that Hashem appears to us through a physical means as well. And this is the idea of the Esh, and the Esh in Mamad Har Sinai, which later will be transferred to the Mishkan and will become the Esh Tamid, the idea of the menorah, the idea of the ketoret. We will get to all of these things, but what's important to see right now is that these are all essential in the idea of relating to Hashem on a physical plane. There is nothing more physical. There is no more physical relationship we have with the world than eating. We are what we eat in the very basic sense of the paradigm, because we really are what we eat, because what goes into us becomes part of us. And this is part of the reason that the halachot of what we are allowed to eat and aren't allowed to eat are so involved, because it's the deepest relationship that we have with the physical world around us. And so on a brief level, on a relationship level, on what's about to happen as far as the Torah is concerned, in our relating to God, the eating here is essential, but the eating we see is essential on another level. And that is on the level of us moving, of Bnei Israel moving at this point from being avadim to Mitzrayim, from being enslaved, to becoming avadim of Hashem. Now, we know that avadim of Hashem are not avadim. They're Bnei Chorin. We become Bnei Chorin in order to be able to be Oved Hashem. But if we look at the process that we're going through here, again, Bnei Israel are seeing the here and now. They're just seeing them getting out. They're not necessarily seeing what they're going into. But here is the beginning, the tzivui here on eating this meal is the beginning of the process of showing Bnei Israel what they're going into as well. Because Bnei Israel are not going out into the abyss. They're not going out into some sort of void. They're going straight from being Avdei Paro into being Avdei Hashem. In the context of food, we see that Bnei Israel relate in Bamidbar, in one of their many complaints to Moshe and Aharon, they relate back to their identification with the food in Egypt with freedom or with chinam, with something that they ate freely. And they say, Zacharnu et hadagah, et hakishuim, et havatichim, et habetzel. We ate all of these things, chinam. We ate for free. And of course, it's clear that they don't mean that they ate for free because they were slaves. That's what they were. What does chinam really mean there? Chinam means that the manner in which an eved eats really is different from the way that a ben chorin eats. A person who is a slave, if you're a good slave, and so your master will be interested in keeping you, he will make sure that your food is always on the table. You come back from a long day's work, your master is the one who is in charge of feeding you. And this is what they mean by chinam. There's no, I don't have to be concerned, and this is in the context, of course, of the man, brought later on in Bamidbar. I don't have to be concerned that I'll wake up tomorrow and not have any food, because if I'm a good slave and my master is interested in preserving me, he will make sure that my food, that I always have food. And of course, this is the difference between being someone who is living at your parents' house and someone who is independent. The difference between being a slave to someone else and being responsible for yourself is the difference in having to care for yourself. And a large part of that, as we all know, is ensuring that there is food on the table on a financial level, but even on a more basic, putting food on the table. You have to put food on the table. You have to prepare the food. You have to buy the food. You have to flavor the food. There's a lot of work that goes into the preparation of food, that most basic necessity of food, that is not existent. It's not something I need to be concerned with when I am a slave to another person. And here, the act of preparing food is something that's already going to bring Bnei Israel here, is expected to bring Bnei Israel here into the mindset of what it means to be Avdei Hashem. Because when you're Avdei Hashem, Hashem doesn't give you man from the Shamayim. Okay? That's only a temporary measure. When the man stops, that's the time when Bnei Israel are expected to be on their own. They're expected to grow up and be independent. That's when they receive Eretz Israel. And then they have to cope on their own. And the difference between being Avdei Paro and being Avdei Hashem is that you have to work hard to be an Eved of Hashem to be independent. Because Avdei Hashem are Bnei Chorin. And here the movement, and so here the food is very symbolic. This meal, this last meal in Mitzrayim, is very symbolic of this movement from being Avdei Paro to becoming Avdei Hashem who are also Bnei Chorin. And so here we see a tremendous amount of stress on the eating. Now, if we look at the historical perspective, going back once again to Korbanot, the eating of Korbanot is an essential part of the atonement achieved through Korbanot. In other words, relating to Korbanot not only by giving them away, but by eating them. And not every Korban could be eaten by the person himself. For example, a Chatat and an Asham, Korbanot that are brought for certain sins cannot be eaten by the person bringing them. I think this seems obvious. Okay, the reason behind it seems obvious. But even there, as the Gemara tells us, Kohanim ochlim uve'alim mitkaprim. If the Kohen doesn't eat his portion of the Korban, there is no atonement in the Korban. If we've already gone to the level of atonement, atonement in a Korban is achieved through two things. One is the eating, as we've just said. And the second is the very essential avodat hadam. What is done with the blood is part of the atonement, and here we have another, one of the idea here comes across in many different parshiot. Usually when we talk about the isur to eat dam, there's a prohibition to eat any blood, And the reason is ki adam hu hanefesh, the dam, the blood symbolizes the very life, the very being of the animal, and therefore we're forbidden from eating it. And at the same time, that dam hu hanefesh, the blood, which is considered the essence of the sacrifice, is used for atonement. And it's used for atonement in different ways, in different korbanot. There's always some sort of trickling or throwing or pouring of dam on the mizbeach in order to atone for sins. And this is the essence of avodat adam. This is something that comes up in all of the korbanot that are brought every day, as well as the special korbanot. And we know that there's a much more elaborate and involved avodat adam that we're familiar with on Yom HaKippurim. For this same reason, there's a special involvement in atonement on Yom HaKippurim, and so the Avodat Adam is very elaborate. Taking all of these, I know this was a lot of information, and some of the information you'll have to bear with me, we're going to go back to in the next few parshiot as the things become relevant. But it was a lot of information that's necessary in order to understand some of the themes that come across in this parasha itself, because this parasha is looked at both from the perspective of here and now and from that historical perspective, the perspective of the Brit. And one of the things, and we said the bite here is stressed, and I think this is already obvious. In other words, we're looking at the movement of Bnei Israel from a family to a people, and now at the beginning of Shemot, and now we're looking at the movement of Bnei Israel from a people, from a nation, to becoming the nation of God, and this is going to be the significance of the bite. And so we're going to have to wonder, what type of bite is this? This is not just any bite. There are many nations out there, but this is going to be a bite. Beit Israel are going to be a nation of God, and so seeing what happens with this bite is going to be crucial. But also everything, almost every commandment brought throughout this parasha relates in one way or another to the eating. And we saw that already here, even the taking of the sacrifice, the number of the animal, the number of animals that has to be taken is already measured by the amount of animals that can be eaten by one given family. And if the family can't finish a whole one because they're old people, they're children, there just aren't enough people. So you take in another family, that which is closest by. And this is already, the eating here already comes in as a very strong parameter. What are they commanded to take? Pasukei. Se tamim zachar ben shana yelachem, min hakvasim umin haizim tikachu, v'haya lachem lemishmeret ad 14 yom lachodesh hazeh, v'shachatu oto kol kehal adat Yisrael ben ha'arbaim. Here we already have components, and this is what already raises the question as far as korbanot. We already have components here that remind us too much of a korban to ignore. If you go to, when you sit down in a nice restaurant, we might ask for one cut of steak or another, but we don't usually relate to the age of the animal or to the gender of the animal. The fact that here we have a se, first of all, tamim, first and foremost, a whole seh, okay? This is a seh that has to be without a blemish, without not a baal mum, already throws us into the world of korbanot, because if we're only eating a meal, so who cares if it's a baal mum? But if we're talking about a korban, so this is something that's essential. It has to be a zachar, it has to be a male, and it has to be ben shana, it has to be 1 year old. And we're commanded to take a sheep or a goat, min hakvasim umin hayizim, and you have to save him. You have to keep him until the 14th, and on the 14th, you're going to slaughter him. And here, this goes back into the question. This goes back to the question of the date. And Rashi, of course, asks, why 4 days between when we take him and when we slaughter him? The simple pshat here goes back to Baal Mum, I think, is to the Setamim. In other words, we have to ensure that it's there, because we are going to be in such a rush. We're going to see that the meal is done in a rushed way, that we're about to leave Mitzrayim upon the completion of this process. And so we don't have time to dilly-dally. You have to make sure that you find your Seh in advance. Why 4 days? I think that this relates, again, to the Tmimut of the Seh, the fact that the Seh has to be whole and unblemished, and so we're keeping an eye on it to make sure that everything is okay, that it's all ready for this meal that we're commanded to have. But Rashi takes this somewhere else. And Rashi says, Bnei Israel were undeserving. It's a famous midrash that Rashi brings. Bnei Israel were undeserving of Yitziat Mitzrayim. They had no mitzvot. And therefore, God gave them two mitzvot involving blood. One was the blood of the Milah, Brit Milah, and one was the blood of the Pesach. And God says, Va'omar lach, he quotes the pasuk from Yechezkel, Bedamai chayi, you will live through this blood. The blood of your sacrifice is going to be blood that that gives you merit for survival. Rashi makes a few connections here that are essential for the understanding of Korban Pesach. First of all, it's important to note that Brit Milah is not mentioned anywhere here. It's mentioned later on when we talk about, in later Parshiot, when Hashem talks again about Pesach Dorot, he says, V'chol arei lo yochal bo, a person who's uncircumcised is not allowed to participate in Korban Pesach. But Rashi brings in an essential element here of the connection between the blood of Brit Milah and the blood of Pesach, which of course relates to everything that we've been discussing, because the connection here, because Pesach represents the next level as far as our connection with God through the Brit. If up until now the Brit was a Brit of Yechidim, a Brit between me and God, in my willingness to sacrifice my son, which comes across in my willingness to give him a Brit Milah, and of course we discussed the story of Moshe not giving his son a Brit Milah exactly in this context. He didn't identify with the Brit, he was almost killed because of that. And here the blood of the blood of the Pesach, and we're going to see that just like the blood of the Milah back by the story of the Moshe saved him, the blood of the Korban here of Pesach is going to save Bnei Israel. In other words, there's something about the blood, just like we said by Korbanot, blood is atonement. Here, blood is a protective measure. The blood saves Bnei Israel. I think that it's clear that what the blood represents in Korban Pesach, just like what the blood represents by Brit Milah, and which is mirrored here in Rashi's Pirush, is the willingness to sacrifice. The willingness to sacrifice one's self or one's child, the willing to sacrifice the Orla, the willing to bleed in order to be part of the Brit with God. And here, the willingness to use blood once again in order to be part of the Brit with God, both represent our willingness to be part of the Brit with God, our connection with the Brit with God. And these are, not surprisingly, and this has been mentioned before, the two only mitzvot aseh, the only two positive commandments which are punishable by karet. For the most part, the punishment of karet is a punishment that's on a mitzvah lo taaseh, on a negative commandment. And here, Brit Milah, not having a Brit Milah, and not participating in Korban Pesach, if someone is close enough to participate and is tahor. In other words, if someone is in a situation where he's able to participate in Korban Pesach and he doesn't participate, both of these are punishable by karet, because essentially what karet is, cutting one off from the Jewish people. And by not performing a Brit Milah, and by not taking part in Korban Pesach, one essentially cuts himself off from the Jewish people. I am showing that I am not interested in being involved in this Brit, that I am not interested in identifying with this Brit. So interestingly, in this parasha itself, we don't have God bringing in Brit Milah, because this is already moving Bnei Israel into the next level. This is moving Bnei Israel as a nation into a relationship with God. And so from here on in, the Brit Milah is going to be a personal identification with the Brit Milah, with the Brit with Hashem, whereas Korban Pesach is going to represent my identification as Am Yisrael, as part of Am Yisrael, with a Brit with Hashem. And this is why a Brit Milah is done anywhere, and a Korban Pesach is only done in the Beit HaMikdash. In other words, the Brit here takes a turn to the national level. And here, the idea, once again, the idea of a date that we just read about, we have to have these 4 days allow us to prepare, as Rashi says, to put ourselves into this mitzvah, not only on the technical level as far as ensuring that the animal is not going to be a baal mum, but also on an emotional level of an understanding of what we're doing, what we're getting into, and the fact that this is going to be a sacrifice. There's going to be a sacrifice done here. What is the sacrifice going to be? Who is the sacrifice going to sacrifice? These are questions that are going to be answered throughout the rest of the parasha. What do they do with the blood? ולקחו את מן הדם, and although we don't have a classic avodat hadam here in the sense of the mizbeach being present, because there is no mizbeach here, yet the avodat hadam again, the involvement in blood reminds us not only of Bnei Israel's willingness to sacrifice for God, but reminds us of the avodat hadam in the korbanot as well, because that's such an essential part of the korban. And so they will take the blood, ונתנו על שתי המזוזות ועל המשקוף, על הבתים אשר יאכלו אותו בהם. What will they do with the blood? They have to put the blood on the two sides of the door and on the top of the door in the houses where this meat is eaten. And once again, the blood is in relation to the eating, and the blood is on the batim. The word batim comes up once again over here. ואכלו את הבשר בלילה הזה, צלי אש ומצות על מרורים יאכלוהו, אל תאכלו ממנו נע ובשל מבושל במים, כי אם צלי אש ראשו על קראיו ועל קרבו. And they'll eat the meat on this night, and it has to be cooked in a certain way, and you're not allowed to eat it raw. It has to be cooked in water. It has to be roasted. The expression rosho al kra'av ve'al kirbo comes up only one other time in the Torah, and that is in Vayikra Perek Dalet, Pasuk Yud Aleph, in the context of chatat. So once again, this throws us back into the world of korbanot. But here we see a large emphasis on the eating, the manner in which it's cooked, the manner in which it's eaten. ולא תותירו ממנו עד בוקר, והנותר ממנו עד בוקר, באש תשרופו. And you cannot leave any of it till morning. And anything that's left until the morning has to be burnt by fire. Once again, איסור נותר. The fact that beyond the parameters of a certain amount of time, you're no longer allowed to eat the korban is something that we are familiar with from the world of korbanot as well. And so this, again, throws us into the feeling, the sense that we're talking about a korban. וככה תאכלו אותו. מותניכם חגורים, נעליכם ברגליכם ומקלכם בידיכם, ואכלתם אותו בחיפזון. פסח הוא להשם. And this is the manner in which it will be eaten. Again, going back to the eating. The details of the eating don't only come across in how the meat is cooked or in how fast it's consumed, but even the way you're dressed while you eat it. Because Hashem could just say, on this night you should be dressed because we're ready to go. But that's not what he says. He says, "V'kacha tochlu uto." What is what you're eating? What is what you're wearing have anything to do with the eating? Everything relates here to the eating. Once again, within that theme of us, through eating, expressing our becoming the nation of God. And so you have to eat it ready to go with your belts on your hips and your shoes on your feet and your stick in your hand. And you have to eat it fast because this is Pesach Lahashem. And this Pesach Lahashem is, again, so out of whack if we're talking about the here and now. What does this have to do with anything? And much more understandable if you realize that the whole parasha is being looked at from the historical perspective of the Brit. This is Pesach. This is what everything is going to be about. This is not just your last meal. This is not just a meal. This is a meal that's going to define you as the nation of God. ועברתי בארץ מצרים בלילה הזה, והיכיתי כל בכור בארץ מצרים, מאדם ועד בהמה, ובכל אלוהי מצרים אעשה שפטים, אני השם. And I will pass through Egypt on this night, and I will kill every firstborn in the land of Egypt, the people and the animals, and the gods of Mitzrayim will be smitten. I am Hashem. And again, the Ani Hashem gives us, again, that same broader perspective. V'haya hadam lachem le'ot al abatim asher atem sham, v'ra'iti et hadam ufasachti alachem, v'lo yeh bachem negif lemashchit ba'akuti be'eretz Mitzrayim. Now here again, we see the following commandment as part of the here and now. The blood, the whole point of the blood is to be a protective measure so that you are not killed in Makat Bechorot. And yet, we have an insertion of all of these words that really don't relate at all to the here and now. V'haya hadam lachem le'ot. And this blood will be a sign. An ot is a word that comes up whenever we talk about a historical brit with God. There's an ot by brit milah. There's an ot by the brit of the keshet, by Noach. There's an ot when we talk about the tefillin. When we talk about things that relate to the historical britot with God, we use or we hear the word ot. And so this blood is going to be an ot. What do you mean it's going to be an ot? Yes, this blood is not just a protective measure. It's symbolic of what is happening now. There's a symbolism here as well. And this is an ot al habatim. This is an ot on your houses. Once again, this word is used. The bayit here being so essential. And I will see the blood. And of course, there's the protective measure of the blood here as well. And then Bnei Israel, the bechorot of Bnei Israel, the firstborns of Bnei Israel, will not die when the Egyptians die. What happens here, we have this mix of something which is seemingly a korban and seemingly not a korban. We said that one of the things that's really missing here is the mizbech, is a mizbech to sacrifice upon. But from the work that's being done, from the blood work, which we're used to seeing on the mizbech, and from the great stress of a different component here that relates to place, I think that what the psukim are trying to give us, is that the houses here become, the houses of Bnei Israel, become a mizbech. Why is this significant? It's significant, first of all, in the sense that a mizbech is a place which is the domain of God, and therefore people, in fact, sought refuge when they deserved to die sometimes on the mizbech. Throughout the Tanakh, we see that people go to the mizbech, and sometimes a person who kills b'mezid, someone who murders someone purposely, and the pasuk itself states, "Me'im mizbechi tikachenu lamut." Even if he seeks refuge by the mizbech, you could take him from there because he deserves to die, teaching us that the rest of the time, if somebody transgresses and is punishable by death, the mizbech could protect him. In other words, the mizbech is some sort of embassy. It's God's embassy. You stepped into the mizbech, you're in a different country, you're in a different land, you're on the land of God, and nobody could touch you until things are figured out properly. This is the role that we see that the mizbech takes. What's going to happen here with the houses of Bnei Israel, the houses that they're going to surround by blood, they're going to surround the opening by blood, just like we surround the mizbech by blood in order to atone. Those houses are going to become houses that are kodesh l'Hashem. And therefore, the mashchit cannot come and touch Bnei Israel when Bnei Israel are in those houses. This ought to be something historical because what was happening with the bayit until now, the movement from the mishpacha, from the family, to the bayit, to the nation of Israel, is now exactly making that next movement from a bayit, a nation which is just like any other nation, to the nation of God. I am creating a situation where my bayit is a bayit that is kodesh l'Hashem. I'm creating a situation where my bayit is a mizbech. And this is the reason that we hear here so many hints to the world of korbanot, even though we're not really talking about a korban, because what's happening here is that we're turning our house into a bayit. And it's as if we're eating a sacrifice inside that bayit, exactly for that symbolic measure of moving from eating the food of my master to moving into eating the food of my next master. And of course, this is the food of Bnei Chorin, and therefore we have to be so deeply involved in the process of preparation of the food, because being an Eved L'Hashem is not like being an Eved for a person. Being an Eved L'Hashem means you're a Ben Chorin. Chorin means that you have to be responsible for yourself, means that you have to look after yourself, and all of these expectations are really bringing us into the feeling of what it means to be an Eved Hashem, what it means to be part of the Brit with Hashem that's going to come across now. At this point, continuing with this historical perspective, Hashem goes on to describe Chag HaMatzot, because this is not only going to be a one-day holiday of Chag HaPesach, it's not going to only be a holiday which represents what happened on this one night, but it's going to be a seven-day holiday in the future which represents the entire process, and 7 days is a whole, right? The world is created in 7 days. 7 days is a process. Pesach, what we call Pesach today, but really the Torah calls Chag HaMatzot, is a process of internalizing the process that Bnei Israel went through for Yitziat Mitzrayim. And here, as we've been saying all along, there's much more than just the here and now. This is something much more broad, much more historical, that has to do with bringing Hashem into the world, bringing Hashem into the lives of Am Yisrael, and of Am Yisrael becoming the nation of God. And this is where the Tzivui ends. And at this point, we turn to Moshe, who goes and delivers the message of God to Bnei Israel. And what's more interesting than what Moshe actually says to Bnei Israel is what he omits. Vayikra Moshe lechol zikne Yisrael vayomer alehem. I'm in the second column now. Okay, so Moshe called all of the elders of Israel and he said to them. First of all, note Moshe is speaking, not Moshe and Aharon. Although Moshe and Aharon were addressed here, Moshe is speaking. We're used to this. We're used to hearing Moshe speak. But since we've been tracking this and since we've placed so much significance on it in the past, it's very important to note that though Hashem speaks to Moshe and Aharon, Moshe is the one who delivers the message. In other words, this is going to be a Moshe perspective. I think you could already guess some of the components that are going to be omitted. Okay, this is a Moshe perspective. Mishchu ukhu lachem tzon lemishpechotechem v'shachatu ha-pasach. Go and take a sheep per family, and slaughter this Pesach. Go back to what did Hashem, now we're going to have to parallel this to the commandment, right? What did Hashem say? We said that the psukim stress, first of all, the bayit. The bayit and the bayit and the bayit and the bayit comes up four times in the pasuk parallel to Moshe's words. What does Moshe use instead of bayit? Mishpechotechem, your families. Can you see the here and now? Very much versus the brit. Versus the historical perspective. We're talking history here. We're making history here. B'nai Israel are becoming Beit Israel. But that's not what Moshe says. Moshe says your families. And it's a stark difference when you look at how much stress there's going to be here on the Beit. And if, as we said, the idea of the Beit that comes across in God's words has everything to do with the historical perspective, with what the Brit means, Moshe, we can't deny that Moshe purposely omits this. Moshe says, listen, take a sheep and one sheep per family. He doesn't mention the word bite here. The bite that's so symbolic that we saw is so significant, Moshe omits. Moshe omits another detail, and that's the detail of the date. Now, it's clear, and it's important to say here, it's obvious that Moshe had to give over the information that is missing in the parallel here. And yet, it's important to the psukim to show that Moshe presented things in a certain way. Now, when we talk about a date really is something that's historical. He could say to them, tomorrow, go and take a sheep, instead of saying, on the 10th of the month, oh, when's the 10th of the month? In fact, it makes a lot more sense for him to say tomorrow or the next day or Thursday. It makes a lot more sense when we're talking about a short-term goal to discuss what day we're talking about than to discuss the date. The date is something that we look back at historically. And even the way it's presented in Hashem's words here is historical. HaChodesh hazeh lachem, Rosh Chodeshim, this is going to be an important month, it's going to be an essential month, it's going to be a month that you look back on and say, this is the month that we were saved. And Moshe omits all of that. By the way, within this context, the question comes up, why the 10th, right? He says to them, the 10th. So it's obvious that the four-day gap here is important for whatever reason that it's important, because B'nai Israel are actually taken out of Mitzrayim on Tetzvav in the middle of the month, and so we need a few days before the middle of the month. But the 10th of the month, when we're looking at the historical perspective, doubled with the fact that what we're talking about here is Shichrur Avadim, is slaves getting out of Egypt, reminds us of another historical event that takes place once in 50 years. Every Yovel, when we have Shichrur Avadim, when we're commanded on the Yovel to let the slaves go, when does that take place? When does that happen? On the 10th of Tishrei, on Yom Kippurim. And so the relationship here between the 10th and the Shichrur Avadim sort of reminds, and HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim, of course we know there's two Rosh Chodeshim, there's Tishrei and there's Nisan. Each one is Rosh Chodashim for something else. But the 10th here, within the context of Shichur Avadim, I think is very powerful when we look at the 10th that's going to represent Shichur Avadim once B'nai Israel receive the Torah. And this is a perspective that Moshe chooses to ignore, or chooses not to pass on at this point. Okay, what parallels Setamim? I have to read the parallel Pasuk, because there's no parallel, of course, right? Okay, Hashem says, all of those details which we identified with the idea of a korban, because a korban is so symbolic of the process that B'nai Israel are going through here, and of course the idea of the eating, which is symbolic of the process that B'nai Israel are going through here, all of those details are omitted. In other words, you look at the parallel, there's nothing in the box. Moshe just doesn't pass on that information. Of course, it's passed on as far as the essence of what they have to do, but in the psukim that beg the comparison, it's too obvious to ignore that Moshe is ignoring a very specific type of detail. Any detail that's historical, that relates back to the Brit, and that relates to the overall, the way that we look at this day, is something that's omitted. Do you think you can wait until the end of the, okay. We move on to the avodat hadam. Velakhu min hadam venatnu al shtei mezuzot. I'm sorry, I'm on the right side of the column now. Velakhu min hadam venatnu al shtei mezuzot ve'al hamashkof al habatim asher yochlu oto bahem. Once again, we said there are two important details here. Where does the blood go? It goes technically al hamashkof ve'al hamezuzot, on the doorway. But where? Ala batim. And we said again here, this is the fifth time that the bayit is mentioned, because the bayit is going to be something that's so symbolic in this process. And what is that bayit? The bayit is the bayit that you eat in. So those two elements of the bayit and the eating, both of which are so significant, how does Moshe describe them? Ulkachtem agudat ezov, utvaltem badam asher basaf, vihigatem el hamashkof ve'el shtei hamezuzot min adam asher basaf. You hear the words, the mashkof and the mezuzot, like he's repeating almost word for what Hashem says, but he omits the bayit. Once again, the bayit in the symbolic sense here is missing from the words of Moshe. And it's especially apparent when we see that he repeats almost everything else. But there's one other thing, I don't know if you remember, we mentioned this pasuk in the past, and we said, Moshe has more details here than what Hashem gives. Not about the location, but about the way that this has to be done. First of all, he mentions how, technically, like how are you going to take the blood? You're going to take it with an agudat ezov, and that's something that Hashem doesn't mention. How does Moshe know this? Not only that, but Moshe mentions another word that's not mentioned in the tzivui by God, and that is v'higa'atim. V'higa'atim el hamashkof. What does Hashem say? V'natnu al shtei mezuzot. Put it on the two mezuzot. Now, technically, the word v'yigatem ala mezuzot means v'natnu ala mezuzot. It means the same thing. But this is a word, this is a shoresh, a root that's come up before in the stories of Moshe, and exactly in this context of Moshe contesting the Brit. And that is in the story of Moshe with the Brit Milah, when Moshe almost dies. V'yihi b'derech b'malon v'yifkasheu Hashem v'yivakesh amito. On the way to Mitzrayim, Hashem met him and he wanted to kill him. Vatikach tzipora tzor vatichrot et orlat bna vataga liraglav. And Tzipora took a knife and she circumcised her son. She cut off her son's orla and vataga liraglav. She touched it to his feet. What exactly was she doing there? I'm not sure. It's a very strange parshia. But that same word, the connection that we just spoke about between the blood of Brit Milah and the blood of Korban Pesach being a protective measure. And the way that this was done throws Moshe back. Here God commands him, do this thing with the blood. And Moshe says, listen, I was saved once before actually doing this. He has more information on a personal level to give over to Bnei Israel than Hashem even gives him, because he's been there before. He spoke to Tzipora afterwards. How did you do? What did you do? She explained to him the vataga. She explained to him what she did. And here he uses the same terminology. But the use of the same terminology here, in a way, shows that Moshe is backtracking to the position that we were supposed to have been in at the beginning of Sefer Shemot, but we're not supposed to be in anymore. If we said there's a ma'avar, there's a movement from being mishpachot, from being the family of Yaakov, to becoming the nation of Yaakov, to becoming Beit Israel. And here we have the movement from being Beit Israel to becoming Beit Israel, who are Beit Hashem, okay, the nation of Hashem. Here we have Moshe going back to the personal. Just like the Mishpachot represents the personal, the Brit Milah, again, represents more in the contrast with the Brit of Korban Pesach, Brit Milah represents more of the personal. And here, even if Moshe is in a place where he's already identified with the Brit Milah, he's using words that relate to Brit Milah rather than words that relate to Korban Pesach when he describes this to Bnei Israel. In contrast to what God says, and maybe we wouldn't even think to notice this if we weren't contrasting it with what Hashem says, but it's so obvious that he omits the bite here. It's so obvious that he omits the eating here. All of these concepts that we saw as so symbolic, he omits. And here he brings in a concept that sort of sets us back, that brings us back to where Bnei Israel already are. Because Bnei Israel already having Brit Milahs, Bnei Israel already relate to God on the level of Brit Avraham, but Moshe is still there as far as his discussion here. Once again, we have an entire chapter omitted here in everything that has to do with the eating. ואכלו את הבשר בלילה הזה, צלי אש ומצות על מרור הם יאכלו, אל תאכלו ממנה נע ובשל ומבשל במים. Everything that has to do with the eating, because of the symbolism of the eating, having to do with a broader perspective, having to do with a broader breit of what it means to be Avdei Hashem, all of that is omitted by Moshe. None of that appears. And then we have a really interesting comparison. Velo totiru, not that up until now it hasn't been interesting, but here, this is the crux of the matter. Velo totiru mimenu ad boker, says Hashem, והנותר ממנו עד בוקר באש תשרופו. And you may not leave any of it over, it being the meat, right? The meat cannot be left till the morning. Anything that's left to the morning has to be burnt by the fire. How does Moshe parallel this? And Moshe says, ואתם לא תצאו איש מפתח פתח ביתו עד בוקר. And you cannot leave your houses until the morning. עד בוקר comes up twice in the words of Hashem, and עד בוקר comes up in the words of Moshe. And yet, when Hashem commands Ad Boker, he's talking about the meat. Again, the eating and everything that it symbolizes. And what is Moshe talking about? The here and now. Moshe turns the commandment about the meat, he turns the commandment about not leaving it until the morning, into a statement that you may not leave the houses until the morning. The Korban here becomes Bnei Israel themselves. And here we have Moshe very much looking at, again, the here and now, the process we're going through now, what's going to happen now. And right now, I'm not looking at what it means to be a Ben Chorin, what it means to eat off of the table of Hashem. I'm looking at the nation that I'm faced with, and I'm discussing the nation that I'm faced with. And therefore, instead of saying, "Velo totiru menu ad boker," which again, it's obvious that Moshe had to pass on this message as well, and that he said it later on, but that's not what the psukim stress. What Moshe stressed is the B'nai Israel component in all of this, instead of the eating component in all of this. V'kacha tochlu oto, once again, the details that have to do with the eating, the manner in which it's eaten, motnechem chagurim na'alechem baraglechem, all of which is omitted by Moshe, anything that has to do with the eating. And again, I say, it's not that he didn't give them the details. They had to know what to do on a technical level, but the psukim stressed that Moshe had a different, he was emphasizing something else. He was certainly not emphasizing the idea here of the eating, because it doesn't come up once in all of the words that Moshe says. Once again, all of this is omitted. And here when we get to the idea of what's going to happen this night, again we hear these grandiose statements by Hashem, "Va'avarti be'eretz Mitzrayim ba'layla hazeh, v'iketi kol bechor be'eretz Mitzrayim," and I will go through Mitzrayim on this night, and I will smite every firstborn in the land of Egypt, me'adam ve'ad be'ma, people and animals, "U'v'chol Elohei Mitzrayim e'eseh shfatim, ani Hashem," and I'm going to torture, I'm going to get rid of all of the gods of Egypt, because I am Hashem. והיה הדם לכם לאות על הבתים אשר אתם שם, וראיתי את הדם ופסחתי עליכם. All of these statements about what's about to happen and what the significance of what's about to happen on the night of Yitziat Mitzrayim, all of which we relate to today, and we look back and we say, this was the night or the day that we became God's nation, etc., is looked from Moshe's perspective, looked at from Moshe's perspective very differently. And Moshe says, "Ve'avar Hashem lingof et Mitzrayim." Okay, so technically he has to mention what's about to happen. Why do you need to hide in your houses? Why can't you come out the whole night? Because Hashem is going to smite Egypt. Now, even here, he omits the actual details. He doesn't have the Bechol Eretz Mitzrayim. He doesn't have the time. He doesn't have the Bechorot. Even who is going to be killed, Moshe doesn't say here. Okay, he mentions this very briefly. Why? Because again, his focus is on Bnei Israel. His focus is on what's happening with them, and not with the more general process here. V'ra'a et adam al ha-mashkof v'al shtei ha-mezuzot. And once again, we have here, instead of the batim, okay, v'ha'a adam lachem le'ot al ha-batim, Hashem says. And Moshe says, v'ra'a et adam al ha-mashkof v'al shtei ha-mezuzot. Hashem will see the blood that's on the door frame, and he doesn't like to mention batim. U'pasach Hashem al ha-petach v'lo yiten ha-mashchit l'avo el batechem l'ingof. This is the first time that Batim are mentioned, but once again, this is very technical. In other words, Moshe is not talking here about Beit Yisrael and the Batim. It's not mentioned over and over again the way it was in the words of Hashem, but Hashem will protect your houses so that anybody who's enclosed inside the house, and I think the stress here is that you should say stay inside the house, is not going to be killed. So his focus is very much on Bnei Yisrael. His focus is very much on the here and now. And even at the very end, when Moshe brings in the historical perspective, because at this point, it's mitbakesh. Moshe has to say, although Bnei Israel might be looking at things from the perspective, I just want to get out. I don't care what's going to be. Moshe, as a leader, has a responsibility. He can't just take them out into the desert. There has to be some sort of goal. If he takes them out and then they die in the desert, so what did he do? And so as a responsible leader, he does bring up the idea of what's going to happen in the future, but even in that sense, and even within the broader scope of what happens in the future, he focuses more on the here and now. And so the end of his words are, "Ushmartem et hadavar hazeh lechok, lecha ulevanecha ad olam," and this is going to be something which you're going to view in history. Note that he takes it outside of the context of the actual commandment, and this is just like an appendix. And when you come to the land of Israel, you're also going to do similar things to what you're doing here, Korban Pesach. And when your sons say to you, what are you doing? And you will say, this is a Korban Pesach, which represents that Hashem saved Bnei Israel. Now, when you look at the parallel psukim again about Chag HaMatzot, they are, Ki be'etzem hayom hazeh, hotzeti et tzivotechem eretz Mitzrayim. On this day I have taken the armies of Bnei Israel out of Mitzrayim. Ushmartem et hayom hazeh ledorotechem chukat olam. And Hashem goes on to say, anyone who eats chametz, v'nichreta hanefesh ha'im me'adat Israel. The idea of Beit Israel and Adat Israel, a nation of Israel, and who is in and who is out and who is showing that they're part and who is showing that they're not part is something that's very stressed in the words of Hashem. So even when Moshe goes to that historical perspective and he says, listen, you know, in years from now we're going to be looking back and we're going to be saying, wow, what are we wowed about? Not about the Brit and not about what it means to be the nation of God and not about the eating off of the table of God, not about what it means to be a Ben Chorin, but about the fact that we were saved. And so even when Moshe brings in the historical perspective, he brings it in, he relates to it once again from the perspective of here and now. I'll leave you with a question. I think we see the idea of these two sides coming across to Bnei Israel, of the historical perspective and the here and now, in the end of the chapter where it says, and this is why I took it outside of the table, there are really two endings. One is Vaikod Ha'am Vaishtachu, okay, the end of the pasuk that we just read, Vaikod Ha'am Vaishtachu, and the people, they bowed down. And the second is Vayelchu Vaya'asu B'nei Israel, Kasher Tziva Hashem et Moshe Ve'aharon, Ken Asu. I think we have Bnei Israel themselves sort of seeing those two levels, those two ideas that come across, the idea of the here and now, which demands asiya, we have to get up and do something, the ken asu, but also the vaikoda am vaishtachavu. It seems a little bit out of place here, like them bowing down to Moshe. So it's beautiful. It throws us back to the first time that they believed Moshe, and here again they believe Moshe, and they're with him, and you know everybody, and they trust in him and everything, and that's all great. But nothing has happened yet. He commanded them, so they should go and do it. But instead, they bow down to him. In other words, there's a certain showing of respect, of identification with what he had said. And of course, although Moshe is the one who delivers the message with everything that he's omitted, what we have here is Kasher Tziva Hashem et Moshe ve'Aharon. And here I want to leave you with a question. This is really not a question that's answered in the Psukim, but what I wonder is, does this represent a continuation of Moshe's personal process toward identifying with the Brit? Or is Moshe giving the people what he thinks they're ready for at this point? In other words, it's not clear to me, and I think it's not clear from the Psukim, and maybe we need to sit and read it again and again until it does become clear, and this I'll leave to you, that Moshe might see a need here for the Am who hasn't gone through the personal process that he's gone through, who hasn't been in daily contact speaking to Hashem, To understand that he's relating very much to their here and now. And here I refer you back to the psukim. We compared the emunah b'Moshe, that they believed in Moshe the first time he came around, and then when the work became harder, ve'lo shamu el Moshe mikotzer ruach u'mavodah kasha, we said they couldn't relate to what he was saying because they were very busy with the here and now. Perhaps this is not so much anymore about Moshe not identifying with the Brit as much as it's about Moshe identifying with the people's needs vis-a-vis the relationship between what's going to happen on the here and now level and what's going to happen on the Brit level. And that's why at the end of Moshe's words, he does bring in a historical perspective. And that's why we do have him hinting to his experience with Brit Milah. I'll leave you with that question and bid you a Shavua Tov. Thank you very much.